Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
This is the Adam Carriker Show on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Adam Carriker Show here on 93.7 The Ticket, live from Blur, tailgate at the Hilton in Omaha. We're here from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Doors open daily from 10:30 a.m. to midnight through June 21st, corner of 12th and Cass. Can't miss the big white tent for Blur parties on the south side of Cass Street. This is a 13th annual tailgate with an all-inclusive bar and buffet. 18, count them, Jake, 18 TV showing live baseball games. We got some going on right now, don't we?
Not until one. That one will be the elimination game.
Those are replays.
Those are replays.
All right. Multiple seating options, including a hammock. Buy tickets at the door, or more preferably, please purchase at www.blurevents.com/Omaha. All right, Jake. Chad's live texted in. You get SEC bias thinking from every team is good. Need to do an NFL schedule since it's pretty much the NFL now. I think he was talking about your playoff model, what you would prefer. What's your response to that real quick?
Well, I think he was saying like kind of the human error of trying to use those instead of kind of having it played out on the field. And, you will have that from time to time. Again, that's why I think the best model was either go to undefeated or you don't. And then if you had one loss, it was kind of like, okay, well, now we can have an argument about which one lost team gets in, and maybe that might not be fair. But my argument always was that, well, don't lose. You know, if you're number two going in the championship game, you should be lucky to be there. You should try to be number one going in. Again, that's a very cutthroat. You have to win every game. But that's what I loved about college football. And I think more once you get into like the biases and the arguments, we saw this last year with the SEC where they're arguing number 12, 13, and 14 should get in. I think the further you go down, the more you kind of have that argument because then there's more teams involved. If you just kind of keep it to a smaller amount, then I think any sort of bias will be left out and it'd be more back to win your conference championship or, you know, very rarely might be if you had a 14 playoff, right? You'd very rarely have a team that didn't win their conference championship. You know, I should say very rarely. We've seen teams win there out of the SEC. But, it just seemed like the less amount of teams you're arguing over, the less, you know, the bias of a person deciding it would factor in on it.
Well, the less teams you're going to get from the same conference, the less amount of teams you have in general. So there's going to be less bias towards a particular conference. All right. Serious question here, and know that I'm the less is more. I'm the emphasize the regular season in college football type guy, but I got to ask, if you're going for undefeated teams, isn't everyone just going to schedule patsies then?
They might, yeah, the old non-con. It didn't necessarily go that way, right? Nebraska would play games out of the gate that would be challenging. I think you kind of would have to try to incentivize that one way or the other. Maybe it's, you know, television market to get opportunities, get eyes on your program. But you have to be kind of sneaky because there are programs out there that might look to duck competition a little bit to try to get in because they think their conference is so difficult. So, yeah, I think you the problem with having 136 team is there's probably no perfect way to do it to cover all bases.
So I keep alluding to things. The only reason I don't go through the whole diatribe, I kind of gave you a brief peak during the break of what I'm thinking in my utopian college football playoff world. If I could start everything over from scratch, I need more time to figure out the minute details. But one of the things I would do, I told you, I would have less teams, less conferences. I think in the scenario I'm thinking, there's going to be like 80 to 90 teams. The future of college football down the road is somewhere around 40 to 50 teams, Big Ten, SEC. That's what it's going to be. I've always thought 120, 130 was kind of crazy, a little excessive. In my utopian world, probably be about 80 to 90, maybe four even power conferences and maybe two G5 conferences. And if there's 16 teams in each conference, what does that come out to? Like 96 total teams or something like that, which even then seems like a lot based on what I'd like, but that's just kind of what the numbers come out to. All right, a little bit of Caitlin Clark news here. She returned the other night. Caitlin Clark's three-point distances she made in her comeback win over the weekend. Her team anyways, the Fever. She made three-pointers from 33 feet, 27 feet, 31 feet, 26 feet, 31 feet, 27 feet, 26 feet. Do you know how far the three-point line is in the WNBA?
I can look that up.
No. I've got it in front of me.
She's well beyond.
Yeah. What's your guess? What's your estimation?
I would sound like an idiot because I'm not very good at that.
That's okay.
So I better not.
I want you to sound intelligent. You're on the show with me.
Yeah, that helps
the show. Kind of like Big Ten winning makes Nebraska look good here.
The three-point line
is 22 feet.
Okay.
So she's shooting from 11 feet, 5 feet, 9 feet, 8 feet, 10 feet, 9 feet beyond the arc and making it look probably easier than how I make layups look, if I'm being honest with you. All right. In her comeback game, she had 32 points, 9 assists, 8 rebounds, and as you so acutely pointed out, 7 turnovers, but we don't talk about those. All right. Oh, and the TV ratings were down 55% while she was sidelined for the WNBA as a whole. So she is a draw. All right. She is a draw one way or another. And again, sports is big business. Good to see you, Michael. Michael Sevier popping by. Saying hi, one of the best in the biz right there. All right, Emmett Johnson. We may save the win totals for Nebraska tomorrow. We'll see how things play out the rest of today's show. But I've seen numerous rankings for running backs across the country. I don't often see Emmett Johnson listed as one of the top 25 running backs in the country. I feel like he's one of the top 25. You know, we'll see. If he ends up top 40, if he ends up top 10. I feel like one of the top 25 running backs in the country, and a lot of this depends on how the whole offense works together, obviously Holgorsen, Dylan, and the offensive line opening holes. But as far as what Emmett can do, he's a good all-around back. He just has this knack for finding the hole, a.k.a. vision. He just has – some guys just have a balance about them. Some guys are big, fast, strong, but they go down easier than you think they should. Some guys don't go down – like based on how you perceive their speed or their strength or their size, but they don't go down as easy as they should, and that's balance. And that's the ability to find the hole, and that's the ability to accelerate at the right time and have patience at the right time. That's what I see with Emmett, okay? But I've not seen him by very many people at all, if anybody, rated as one of the top 25 backs in the country. And what prompted me to bring this up, all right, this is Big Ten Football Talk, ranking the top 20 running backs in the Big Ten entering the 2025 season. Again, Penn State, according to this, has the top two running backs in the Big Ten. Nick Singleton, Catron Allen. All right. Then you go to Oregon. Then you've got Minnesota, Darius Taylor. You got Washington, Jonah Coleman. You got Ohio State, CJ Donaldson. They lost two of the best backs in the country. Mm. Probably the two best backs in the Big Ten last year. All right. Both second-round picks, I might add. You got Indiana. You've got, let me see. Is that Michigan? That's Minnesota. That's an ugly gopher. I can't even tell. Then you got, I don't see Emmett here as one of the top 20 backs in the Big Ten. And I was just like, are you serious? Oh, it depends on who you look at. Okay. So it's two of these guys from the Big Ten Football Talk. The other co-host has Emmett. Oh, I just saw it. Where'd he go? Wait a minute. He's not on. I thought he was on one of them. Oh, there he is.
Oh, yeah,
he's 15th. Okay. So on this one, he's not in the top 20. According to the other one, he's 15th. To not even have him in the top 20, barely in the top 15. Like, he is a good running back. He's a good all-around running back. He does so many things so well. I personally now feel like he's barely eking into the top 15, and this is all projection. This is all guesstimation. We all know that. It's freaking June right now. Okay, at some point, cleat is going to hit grass, and we're going to find out who's really good at football and who's not. And Emmett Johnson is going to put that cleat to grass and show that he's good at football. But to barely crack the top 15 and not even the top 20 running backs in the Big Ten, according to the – honestly, a couple of publications. This is just the one I screenshotted. What are your thoughts on this? It's crazy to me.
It's definitely interesting because obviously the Matt Rhule and staff, they believe he's one of the top backs in the conference. I mean, they at least recruiting wise, it looks like they didn't go out there and add to the room. And you know, there's all this thought, you know, with Nebraska moving up around the country, everybody's looking at Dylan Rehl and taking that next big step. But we saw it from Dana Holgorsen. And that pairing with Emmett Johnson was kind of the biggest benefactor of that, three games into the tenure of Holgorsen. So we'll see if that continues. I think it might. I will ask you this, though, because I think they are, but not completely sure of it. And maybe they have to play this hand one way or the other. Could some of that factor in, you know, he didn't get a carry against Illinois. His own staff, if they would have valued him as a top 10 running back, maybe would have had a higher usage rate, especially early on in the season. Like I said, now I don't think you can really debate it. along with what's kind of going on in that room, he's by far the most tenured there. But, you know, that I think that might have been holding him back is what we said all along. I think just about everybody at the station, there's a large swath of Husker Nation that thought, hey, get Emmett Johnson the ball more. Let's get more out of him. He's really our only big play threat. And still didn't see as many carries as maybe we'd like to see, you know, early on in this season. I think, again, it was corrected more when Holgorsen got involved.
I mean, that is a fair point. As you pointed out, there was a game where he didn't get any carries. There was a game where he got one carry. Combined one carry for those two games, if you talk about those games specifically. So there's probably a little bit of perception is reality until it's undeniable. And then you change perception and that becomes reality. So perception is reality. And a lot of people right now are kind of looking at, you know, maybe his stats as a whole. About 500-600 yards combined last year. That's not going to wow you. And if you don't dive a little bit deeper and look into it more in depth, he had 39 receptions. 23 of them were the last three games of the year. That's when he was getting a lot more touches, a lot more catches, a lot more carries. Holgorsen takes over, and he shows what he can do. Again, he's an all-around back, and he has he's just like a football player. There are some individuals, you watch them play their sports, and you just say they're a player. Whether it's a basketball player, whether it's a football player, I've played with and against individuals who play faster than they are. And I know it doesn't make any sense, but you see them and you watch them, and I don't know what Emmett's 40 is. I'm talking independently of Emmett Johnson right now. You see them, their 40 time, and you're like, well, not that fast. You watch their tape, and they're like, oh, they must run a 4.3. They just play faster. And then there's guys who will run a 4.3, and they play like they run a 4.7. Like, Emmett Johnson, to me, is – and again, I don't know his 40-yard dash time. So, to me, this is independent of Emmett. Now, coming back to Emmett, I watch him play just football play. Like, he doesn't go down as often as you would think he would. He has a knack for bursting it through a hole where I'm like – I have to, like, rewind the tape. Where was that hole? Oh, there it is. How'd he see that? You know what I mean? He's got the ability to do those things. And if you're a national pundit or one of these guys who covers the Big Ten as a whole, let's be real. You're going to focus on the teams that are going to get more clicks. And that's Michigan. That's Ohio State. That's Oregon. That's Penn State. Maybe USC. Nebraska's probably not. I don't know. We have a passionate fan base. We might be in the top five, probably six. But you're going to focus on those teams. So you may not be as up to speed. Having done a Big Ten show, I can tell you right now, this is kind of how it works. You're maybe not as up to speed on some of these other teams. Like, they could probably tell you everything about Oregon's backfield, but Rutgers, I don't know. You know, I can tell you who the starter is, but beyond that, they may not know as much. And some guys will, to be clear. Some guys may not. So I wonder if they just look at his stats as a whole, how the season played out as a whole, and they don't look at the end of it and project forward, hey, this is what happened when Dylan was playing a little bit better at the end of the year under Holgorsen, and this is what happened under Holgorsen as the OC, and project that forward. Then they might just look at the year as a whole because they maybe didn't look as quite in-depth. Maybe not. Maybe they did, and maybe this is just what they think.
Well, and I think you're right. I think stats probably play a little bit into that, and for the reasons we've already been over, his stats weren't top end. I think the other thing, too, is he's not the flashiest player. I think people, what's kind of held him back, even in the Nebraska room that time, is he's good at everything, maybe not great at any, right? He doesn't have top end speed. He's not the biggest guy, you know, plenty of athleticism, but not like a crazy athlete. But he's just, like you said, just a good football player. He uses every bit of what he does have to be a very solid running back. And especially, and this is, you know, kind of the, I don't say the new age, but obviously back in the 90s, you're talking about toting the rock. Out of the backfield, it would be hard for me to imagine there's a whole lot of guys in the Big Ten that are better than him in the pass game.
I would agree with that. It's funny. I play with a guy in D.C., Reed Dowdy, every year. They would draft someone high, like a LaRon Landry, or they trade for someone. I'm talking about safeties here. Brandon Merriweather, right, who won a Super Bowl and was a first-round pick and all that. And every year, Reed Dowdy would get overlooked. He didn't look like he played for the team. He honestly looked like he worked for the team, okay? And Reed and I are really good friends. Our house was actually 15 minutes apart when we lived in Colorado. So we became really good friends when I got there. We were really good friends beyond that. I mean, his wife, wonderful family, even donated her kidney to help save their son's life at one point. They have four kids, okay? So great dude. Every year, he would get overlooked. Come game one, he'd be the starter. Every year. Somebody would get hurt. Somebody would get suspended. Somebody would have a bad camp, and he'd be the starter. And he was just Mr. Reliable, played for, I think it was 9 years, almost a decade, went to Northern Colorado, was just overlooked. Okay. And I would give him crap because I could, and we were close enough, I'd be like, dude, you don't look like you play for the team. You look like you work for the team, brother. But he'd be out there starting with us. Come game one, play one. You go to Emmett, fourth on the depth chart as a freshman, last half of the year. I know there's a lot of injuries, but he was our best running back. Last year, not a ton of carries, as we know early on, belabored that point. The end of the year, our best running back. He reminds me in a way, there's vast differences. But in a way, of Reed Dowdy and what I saw, not only with Reed, but other players throughout my career and other sports and growing up and whatever, but just the guy who makes plays, the guy who's there. And finally, at least from Nebraska fans, he's getting the appropriate shine that he should. I want to see it across the Big Ten. I want to see it across the country. He averaged, again, 20 and a half touches per game. So basically 21 touches per game the last four games of the year, 3 to 4 games of the year, and about 120 to 130 total yards of offense in each one of those games as well. I mean, if we could get that going forward, bro, I'll take that.
Absolutely.
Every day of the week and twice on Sunday. All right, ladies and gentlemen, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.